This is the Age Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, Gary Ablett franks his return to the Cats with an outstanding performance on Easter Monday that drew the boos of the Hawks. The Cats, meanwhile, are flying top of the ladder. We look back at that match, plus discuss the surprise fellow ladder leaders, St Kilda, salute the Blues for their first salute of the season, put the blowtorch on some strugglers, and preview the Anzac Day blockbuster. All that and much more coming up.
Keeps the arms clear, gave it to Delhouse, spinning move, and Blurt!
Get Eddie, Harper out, Eddie, the that's what the crowd wanted, and that's exactly what they got.
Long ball inside 50. Lynch comes at it again. Dusty front and centre. Goal, Richmond.
The nightmare is finally over. Dow goes inside, outside of the boot. There's the ton. There's the ton, and the kick does it on cue with the last kick of the game.
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson, and with us today, Caro, Jimmy Bartel and Jake Noel. Welcome to you all.
Good to see you again, Gleese. Jake did a mighty job in your absence, but it's lovely to have you back.
Is this where are we? Are we at the end of one round or the start of another?
Blur in the Festivus of football, as I think a lot of people are referring it to, aren't they? We've just finished round, we're starting another round, but look, if we all survive the month of April as football fans, I think we'll be okay.
And football's responding accordingly, isn't it, Jake?
It was the best
bizarre
the round
results.
Gone. Incredible results. The West Coast Eagles result, I think, isn't mentioned in the blur, but that is the single biggest result of this season, I think. I'm serious. Port Adelaide getting up to beat them in the way they did was, when the Eagles were flag favourites, I think was an enormous.
Was Fremantle, though, surely.
The shock was Fremantle, but I think the West Coast result was more significant.
Is that because of the way they were defeated?
Yes.
And as a roadmap to beating them?
Yep. I'd be interested in Jimmy and your views on that. I mean, they went in with this player dirty game, get dirty balls in your forward line game style. Don't let them mark. They did not have an intercept mark until well into the second quarter.
Yeah, well, look, I'd have to agree with Caro first. My win of the round was Freo. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. And surprisingly, the way they played, kicking 100-plus points, you go, why don't you play like that every week instead of going back to traditional Ross Lyon footy where we beat you 75 points to 65 points. But on your Eagles, Port Adelaide, I'm still giving the Eagles a pass. I think they've been a very good side for quite a while. You can have flat, dirty nights. I think it was 2009 where we won the flag. We got beaten by Collingwood by about 90 points. Or it might be 2008, one of those years.
I remember that night.
You can just have a flat, bad night. And I just felt like that with the Eagles. The players who played poorly have got so many credits in the bank. Like, how often do you see Gaff kicking the ball out in the full? You see certain players dropping marks. The dirty play reference, it was raining in Perth. It rained throughout the game. It was the perfect night to execute that plan. Now, I'm sure sides will take that plan, but can you do it as well as Port did with the conditions helping?
Jimmy, you were probably too Richie Cunningham to be booed, but on Monday, your former teammate Gary was roundly booed by the Hawks, who have, Jake, form in this area.
Yeah, well,
but what did you make of that?
Goods booing.
No, well, I've been booed by Hawthorn supporters because I got a free kick that I think I shouldn't have gotten, and they booed me from then on.
But if that was the case, Joel Selwood would have been booed.
Well, he does get booed again, especially by Hawthorn fans. But it was really strange tonight, and being at the football halfway through the first quarter, are they booing him?
It
was actually quite aggressive at the start, but as the game wore on, it got louder, and you know what happens when you have a big crowd. The follow mentality comes into play, but towards the end of the game, it turned into a competition between Cat supporters and Hawks supporters. The louder the Hawks supporters booed, the louder the Cat supporters cheered in the end, and certainly didn't hinder his performance.
Caro, was it about the social media, do you think?
I think that was part of it. Tim Watson declared it on the coverage after questioning it early in the coverage. Brian Taylor, I think it was, agreed with him. I'm not saying every Hawthorn supporter who booed was aware of any alleged homophobic sentiment on Gary's behalf. But look, Gary did like the Israel Folau post. He immediately, or pretty quickly, unliked it. He was spoken to by his own club, and I think the AFL made it clear that both he and Matthew Kennedy had to be careful about these things. So they were spoken to. And then Gary went to the effort of explaining, or saying that he'd done it, he hadn't actually read the post when he liked it, which you can believe or not believe. But you know, there were people who were calling Talkback Radio on Tuesday morning saying, bloody oath I booed him because of that. You know, I hate homophobia and it was disgraceful that, you know, the gay people should be made to feel that they're going to go to hell, and that's why I booed him. Now, I think booing's addictive, Jimmy. It gets louder and louder.
He has been booed in the past.
Not like that.
No, I agree. He's been booed in the past. I think it's also there's a number of factors. I think, yeah, there could be a little bit of that. I think he was more in the public eye. I think that's the other thing that happens, is that when you're more in the public eye, Jimmy, you're more of a target, because it's sort of almost indirectly off the Israel Folau
really,
stuff.
We're examining the psychology of just something that's stupid and mindless. So, yeah. I mean, how much thought actually goes into the
It's an intriguing psychology, though, because it did the momentum it gained with Adam Goods, where people didn't even really know why they were booing, but they were just being vicious and horrible in doing it in the first place. The biggest issue about Gary Ablett for me out of Monday was I just didn't think he had that in him anymore. And I didn't think his defensive game was as... I mean, he's transformed from last year, Jimmy.
Yeah, I think the game style is helping that. The Cats have now become the number one side at scoring from their own forward 50, so turning the football back over. And I think that was a bit of a moment from last year when they would have sat in the post-mortem of that Melbourne final loss was so bad. It's going, you know, we could reload again, make the finals with the same group, but, you know, you talk of Dan Menzel, Lincoln McCarthy, and a couple others have moved on. I think must have been a moment where they've gone, if we get back to the finals and lose, we've got to lose with a different group. I'm not saying they're going there to lose, but we have to have a different look about us, and that's, you know, the Gary Rowan, Dalhouse. You bring in Atkins off your VFL list, who's been there for 5 years as well, and a few other different
You're
faces.
You're pushing in Parfitt and Constable, these guys.
You've got to go with a different...
But there was still some... That mark and a couple of those... The Gaz goals, I mean...
He had a 15-metre run-up and Dave Mirra. Yeah. Poor Dave Mirra standing there going, looking around, where did he come from?
He was, you know, writing about it on the day. He had elements of his younger self, but also of his father. In terms of that mark, we all saw that mark and thought, well, that's...
Well, he held it as opposed to his dad.
There's
a bit of a difference between that mark and the Pert mark. Come on.
Like, I wasn't thinking of the Pert mark. I was thinking of the hundreds of marks that his father took.
But I've seen people put up pictures of both and go, whoa, pump the brakes a little bit. He's sitting on Pert's head.
But those 2 minutes in the game, those 2 minutes where he kicked those two goals, one from the mark, one from that... banana out near the boundary, front and square. Yeah, he actually got a handball off, a very quick handball off Luke Dalhouse. That was electrifying. And it was very important in the game, Caro, because it went from 3 points in front to get that first buffer of nearly three goals.
So Chris Judd says that Gary Rowan is the recruit of the year. You can mount that argument now, can't you? He's been...
What was his best game?
Oh, he's been pretty good all year.
Leading goal kicker with Tom Hawkins, yeah.
He's transformed at this footy club.
And Caro, because you've been a bit... There's trouble in Denmark, in Sydney. Can you remember a Swans player coming to another club and demonstrably becoming much better? When's the last time that happened?
Darren Jolly,
maybe? I'll go with a Brownlow medalist, Tom Mitchell.
Okay.
Toby Nagy.
He was
quite a few, actually.
He was their best player in the finals. He was their best... He was close to... Tom Mitchell was showing what he could do final series.
I meant
a player who's on the fringes.
Okay. Right? Okay.
This is...
Well, Toby Nankervis, I think, improved when he got to the Tigers. But again, he was given more opportunity. What you don't see is them criticising their former club. And that is the big thing that's happening now. And I'm not... Look, you're not going to bag a champion or a club that's done what Sydney have done and turn on them straight away. But the questions have to be asked that, you know, things aren't great there. And Gary Rowan has come to Geelong and he's just said, I'm being now allowed to do everything I do best. And that, you know, surely that is what you want from a footballer.
Yeah, you get the impression that he's there to actually apply his skills to the game, whereas you felt towards the end of Sydney, he was just... You just get out of Buddy's way and whoever else we've got there and do some defensive pressure and we'll be happy.
And he said he was walking, felt like he was walking on eggshells. What about the Hawks? Are we?
I thought they were mighty.
Yeah,
I thought they were mighty with the personnel they didn't have, with particularly Stratton, but also Burgoyne and Shields,
Mitchell.
Yeah, Mitchell. I thought.
I thought that was
and Frawley. They didn't have any tall backs, and that meant they had to put Gunston onto Gary Ablett, which was really costly.
Not only that, they were missing basically a player off every line.
Yep.
Blokes that just didn't turn up. You know, you had Connor Nash didn't get a touch for three quarters, got two in the end. Cousins, what, five, six touches
Bruce,
by the end of the game.
Bruce was well
playing
held.
On ball the whole game. Bruce, you know, they had a range of players that just weren't there.
But I'm with Jake, though. I walked away from the game and going, if the Hawks get back, you know, all
absolutely.
These players missing, I think the system and the way they play, they're still a very dangerous side. I didn't walk away going, geez, they're a bit off it. Yeah, yeah. You add those half a dozen names, and then the bottom half a dozen for Hawthorn, just because of inexperience and things like that, they come out. They're completely
I'm completely with you because you look at that, they still got back to, what, 16 points?
Yeah.
They were down by about five or six goals, could have been blown away. With that team, I thought that was an incredible effort.
Is it just a Hawthorn Geelong thing, though? We'll see in the next few weeks,
yeah.
won't we?
Yeah.
It could be. We'll take a break there and come up. We'll take a look ahead at Carlton and the Saints.
We're online all the time. Just search Age Real Footy on Facebook or Twitter.
Akers has a run in. Akers gave it a steal. Pulls the kick short. Long. Struts inside 50. Loads up. Lands one to the jaw.
And sharing top billing at the top of the ladder is the surprise. Well, the Cats might be slightly surprising to be there, but St Kilda is absolutely surprising to be sitting on top of that, well, second on the ladder with the Cats, to separated by percentage, Cara.
Yeah, all power to them. I'll be fascinated to see what happens this weekend against Adelaide, who had a big win but have been really out of form. I'm thrilled. I'm very sorry for Jaron Geary at the moment because I imagine he's in a lot of pain, but he was inspirational, as he has been for a very long time. I just absolutely love Jack Billings and Gresham and Loney and all these players that we thought were told were going to be the next big thing, and we were beginning to wonder, maybe not Gresham last year, but certainly the rest. And they've defied everyone's expectations and lived up to all the preseason hype that no one believed.
Carol, I think, and you wrote about this on the weekend, I think Simon Lefflein has been given a lot of criticism for the Dan Hannabury deal. But I think some of the moves that they made in the off-season, he deserves, and St Kilda Football Club deserve a lot of credit. From what our expectations were, certainly mine, were right down there, and they're a lot better than that.
And what about when he said pre-season on 3AW, we're the fittest side at the moment in the AFL, and everyone went, oh, you've got to be kidding.
They might have been fit, but I saw them in an intra-club match, and they couldn't find St Kilda players in an intra-club match by foot. Their disposal was horrendous. They had that moment where people scoffed when Matt Finnis went in at the JLT game, sort of saying how important it was to get a win. And you're like, gee, you've gone early with that. It's a practice match. But then limping over the line against
Gold Coast,
you just wonder what would have happened if that point, you know, the walls closing in at that point.
Yeah,
just got on a roll from that win.
I find a bit of the Saints like the Port Adelaide a couple of years ago when they got on a bit of a roll. You know, they just told everyone we're the fittest side. It's almost like if the coach and the staff says it enough, we can convince the players.
Yep.
It feels a bit like that with the Saints.
It's almost like a placebo.
Yeah,
placebo effect.
If we say it enough, they'll believe it. And it felt like those comments from Lethers is almost like telling his own club and his own players, you are the fittest side. And they seem to be inspiring each other on the field. We mentioned Geary, but Wilkie, you know, Dean Ken on the forward line, they just seem to be almost getting motivated by their own teammates at the moment when you watch them.
And Tim Membry.
Membry's another.
He's a good player.
And you know, like so many other teams, they've got so many good players out. So many good players
out. I hate to say it, Jake, but he came from the Swans and got better.
Well, yeah. There's actually a few of them. We've got about four of them now.
There's a team, Jake. We'll do a team next week.
But do you reckon there's some psychology in it, Jimmy, of with Carlisle out and Hannabury out and Stephen was missing for a bit, and Roberton obviously as well, that it's like, well, they're not going to be there to do it. You guys are going to do it. You guys, it's up to you.
Yeah, the reality hits home, doesn't it? But there's opportunity for you.
Yeah.
And I think they've embraced that. And I think a couple of those players we mentioned earlier, Gresham has always had talent, but Billings for me was one that everyone I thought was a little bit too critical on. If you go back a couple of seasons, if you kick straight, he's in the All-Australian squad. I think he kicked 26 goals, 36 there or thereabouts, averaged over 20 possessions. But you see some games from Billings where he had 30 and kicked 5. Now that is top end talent. Now you just don't lose that.
Out of contract, Jimmy. What do you think he's worth?
I'm not sure what number you put on it, but I think he's in the perfect spot for him where he is. Now, I think they tried to experiment him as, you know, the full-time winger on ball. I think they've now gone back to what he was doing a couple of years ago, where he plays a bit on ball and plays half forward. There's nothing wrong, as we're seeing, with the 50-50 split. They went through this phase where someone's a forward, we have to make him a midfielder, a full-time midfielder. Now, we've seen very good players playing very good footy, just playing 50-50 splits midfield forward.
We spoke about Ross Lyon and his team being off the lead. Carlton finally kicking 100 points and getting a win.
Party on Lygon Street.
Yeah. Have you seen a better breakout game? Well, you probably have, but I'll put it up there anyway, than Harry Mackay and that just clunking absolutely
Seaton.
Everything. Oh, happened in the same game.
Well, Harry's shown this throughout the early part of the season, the amount of contested marks he's taken. But the thing is, I reckon he's different from Curno and McGovern. He's actually, out of the three of them, the one who's actually a key forward. See, for me, McGovern at his best is your second forward, maybe your third.
What's Curno?
Curno is your second or third forward if he's playing his best. And we always hear his athletic, you know, unbelievable traits. Well, I can see as he gets through his career, he'll go further up the ground, further away from goal. Mackay is 200-plus centimetres. Once he fills out again even more, he'll be over 100 kilos. He's your classic key position, and you build the others around.
So what happened against the Gold Coast? Because you felt like Mackay was going to win that game for them in the third quarter.
It's decision-making. Gibbons, who's about 5'10". Well, I mean, it was
at the end, but they were in the third quarter. They seemed to have the game completely in control, and Mackay just couldn't stamp his influence on the game. And yet on Sunday, oh my Lord.
He monstered
last, well, he had that run year. Down the ground too where he kicked.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been close to goal of the year, although we probably saw potentially goal of the year in another game.
Oh.
Well, he kicked
the young Adelaide fellow.
He brilliant. Took 20 contested marks last year in 13 games, and he's taken 22 in 5 this year. But the difference in him, I think, he was particularly pre-season, I saw one of their practice matches, he was running under the ball. You could just see he had all timing was out. He just didn't know how to attack it in the air. And now it's like, if anything comes near me, I'm going to grab it. It's McGovern-like, you know, that it's any ball gets put up there, he's just got absolute confidence. And I don't know whether it was cause and effect that Curno was also not there.
I think that's a bit of it.
Go on.
Oh, no, I thought you were going to add something.
I was going to ask you a question.
Yeah. Well, I'll just finish off what you were asking. Because Curno's not there, you suddenly realise, I'm the big dog. The ball is coming to me. I just get to go compete, and the game simplifies. Instead of, like you're saying, like last year or, you know, different moments already in his early career where you're sort of always the default position, am I in the right spot? Am I getting in the way of Curno? Young players can do that. They overthink the game. You know, I have to be here, I have to be there. It's easy when Curno is out. You know, look, the ball's coming to me. Just go make a contest.
The other side of that, though, is that with Curno out, he probably gets the better defender. You would put the better defender to Curno over Mackay.
I just thought Petrovsky Seaton seems to have a nice little thing going where stand near Patrick Cripps is a good idea. I spoke to David Parkin. He thinks Patrick Cripps is the best player in the competition. Is that overstating it, or is he now at that point? Because he's incredibly consistent.
No, it's not overstating the moment. Petrovsky Seaton, smart business decision, riding shotgun to Patrick Cripps. That's how you'll keep getting paid and getting played as well.
For every good team, there's a bad one. We'll take a break here and come back looking at those that are now under the microscope.
Get access to every episode as it drops. Hit subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Sees Kent on the lead, and he puts the lace out to him, runs onto it, thinks about going for home. He'll love that. Against his old team, he's got a couple, and the Demons have a problem.
Welcome back. If St Kilda's rise was the surprise so far this season, their opponent on the weekend, Melbourne's drop, is equally surprising and alarming, Caro. Did you see this level of misery coming?
No, I thought after they beat Sydney, I thought they would have played themselves back into a bit of form. I thought that they hadn't come back in the shape they should have, and they had injuries, and it was going to turn around because there were so many good players last year, but they've been woeful. And listening to Paul Roos on Monday on 3AW say that he's hearing a lot of players didn't come back in the right shape. You just have to ask Jimmy whether they are too easily satisfied, Melbourne.
Yeah, it does seem like that at the moment, because they were pretty quick to take shots at the Gold Coast about their fitness levels and things like that. And I get there's some extenuating circumstances with guys, you know, surgeries and things like that, but that surely can't be the whole group. They lack energy at the moment. Sides now know if you just match Melbourne, you don't have to beat them in the contested footy. You can absolutely torch them on the outside. So that comes down to two things. You're either not fit enough to do it or you're not prepared to do it.
It's a bit of both, isn't it?
Well, they're both pretty bad.
What about the coaching? So the Melbourne supporters get frustrated by Simon Goodwin's inability to shift things when it was clearly at halftime they're in big trouble.
Because the coaching stuff, I find for me, Melbourne this year, I think they need to slow the tempo of the game down. And now it's going to bore the life out of people, and it's the type of footy we don't like seeing. But the style of footy they were so good at playing last year, you think that contest stuff, and it's quick and they scored heaps, and we go, how good are Melbourne for footy? But they're not actually fit enough or capable to actually play that style of footy at the moment. They've got to slow it down, possess the footy, because their back line's getting exposed because they're moving too quickly.
They don't have experienced defenders, Jimmy, and they're slow.
Yeah,
they are slow.
And then it leads to these shallow inside 50. So the worst place you can kick the footy or turn over is actually at the top of your 50-metre arc. So they had 72 inside 50s against the Cats, against the Saints. How many times did you say, kicked into the top of 50, get at the ground, the Saints whack out there, far side of the ground, and away it goes.
But that was also, which goes to your point about either not fit enough or not passionate enough to do it. The Saints were outnumbering them at each end of the ground. They had numbers at the feet in defence and in attack. So they're going up and down the ground, and Melbourne weren't. Is fitness a sufficient alibi at this stage of the season? Can you not have got yourself fitter?
I think they were confident that, you know, by this stage they'll start to get match fit. But the problem is sides are getting match fit as well. It's not like the competition waits for you to catch up, is it?
There's another big issue, and that's up forward. I mean, Jesse Hogan looked inspired at the start of the year when he had all his troubles. But Tom McDonald looks completely lost.
Well, he's another missed preseason, but he's running out of... I mean, that's an excuse for how long, Jimmy?
All right, that's what I'm saying, that you can't carry it the whole year. But they look unbalanced to me inside their forward 50. It's either mark it or the ball comes out. You know, just quickly, McDonald is a mark and lead player. Melksham's very good, medium-sized mark and lead. Wiedemann's a marking player first. Even Petrarca tries to get the ball first on the mark. There's not too many ground-level players there when you have that forward line.
No. Well,
would you bring anyone in?
Who have they got ready to go? That's the thing.
Yeah.
All the four you just mentioned are, to varying degrees, pretty badly out of form.
Melksham's shown glimpses, I think, out of that lot.
Yep.
Wiedemann gets... I guess the pass of being young and the fluctuation, but I don't know what to do with Tom McDonald. You might have to send him back.
Yeah, he gets less of a pass if he's asking for big dollars, Wiedemann. But, Tom McDonald's numbers are, you know, last year he was averaging 3 marks inside 50, down to 1.4, you know, goals 2.6 a game last year in 0.4. I mean, he's also a product of how it's coming up the ground. You're talking about the way it's been brought in the shallow entries. It's easier to point the finger at forwards when it's doing that, but they're leaking both ends. I think there's a 50-point turnaround or something game on game. They're leaking 26 points more a game and kicking 24 less.
And the hard thing too is they'd often free up McDonald to get him in the game by being the second ruck.
Yeah.
Now you bring in Big Prusy, he's your second ruck.
But they'd also free him up by putting him up onto a wing for 5 and 10 minute bursts last year. And I know they've done that again, but it was interesting they didn't put him back, because Prusy is actually having as much impact. He's looking likely enough as a forward, and you still use him as the second target. You got Wiedemann up there and Melksham, as you say, Petrarca.
Jake, there was a worse performance on the weekend, and that was North Melbourne on
North Melbourne,
Friday.
North Melbourne's, yeah, I agree. Melbourne were in the game. I mean, North Melbourne's performance was pathetic, and they've done a great job as a footy club to build that occasion, but it was taken off St Kilda, and I wonder what the AFL's attitude will be. I imagine they'll keep it and they'll ride out the fluctuations. But
they should just get rid of Good Friday footy altogether, but that's another issue.
That's another issue.
There's issues off-field and on-field at North Melbourne. Their crowds are down. There's been a lot of talk about their off-field leadership over the last few weeks. The supporters are off the coach big time and not turning up to games. The coach is a big figure who's done a brilliant job for a long time. Outperformed the expectations of his list and, you know, champion data.
I think they're having the year this year that people thought they'd have last year.
That even maybe they thought they'd have last
year.
And then they thought they were better than they were, and they bring in these second stringers who just...
Now, that is the moral to the story. Those trades, Jimmy, Polek, now he's Pittard, a talented player. Pittard.
Hall.
Who is a buy one, get one free Pittard, which is never a good idea. And
Hall.
Oh, it's always and a good Hall, idea when
Hall,
you go shopping.
Culturally
yeah.
at the Gold Coast, I don't think I'd be talking out of school to say Hall was not...
Well, he's not a tackling machine.
Not necessarily a
Tyson's great been fit. A good, but has been a reliable, honest sort of player, but he's not a quick player that's going to help.
No, and that's the thing. They identified we needed more speed, but yet, apart from Polek, who plays almost a classic wingman style where he stays right on the outside... They actually haven't found speed in the midfield. Now, you know, Pittard's behind the ball. Hall is, you know, fly through the contest sort of thing. But they actually need some explosiveness and speed away from the contest. Higgins tries as hard as he can, but opposition are putting a lot of time
in. Playing
the
worst team too, because that centre square setup of Essendon.
But some of those guys you mentioned, the ones who've come in, are earning reasonably good money, big money.
I think Pollock's earning more than reasonably good money.
Yeah, and Pittard earns a lot for what I think people thought he was worth. And so they've got list management issues. So you look at their head of footy, Cameron Joyce. Nothing wrong with Cameron Joyce, but is he experienced enough and strong enough to be leading a club through the issues they're having? Is their CEO strong enough? Is their president, who I notice has been doing a lot of media in the last couple of days after being accused of being a part-time president? I just, you know, you have to wonder about the leadership there. And the fans are off the coach. Is the club starting to worry about the coach? And is the coach and the club falling out of love with each other?
I only have heard really effusive things about Ben Buckley and his leadership at the time of the Majak incident and how he came in and took
well,
control of the club.
Well, you would hope so. I mean,
well,
heavens
not everyone
to
would
Betsy.
Do so. Not everyone would have the capacity to galvanise a club in that sort of emotional moment. And I'm told that he did. And there was only really strong supportive words for that. Now, that's one significant incident. This is dealing with, you know, what is the structural issues and the decision making. Have they repeated the sins and the errors of Port Adelaide, Jake, when they went the Watts Rock?
Caro, they've done what Port Adelaide did last year. And it's interesting. Port Adelaide have gone youth with Connor Rosie. And Zach Butters
is
actually from the pick that North gave up for Polek.
Yep.
Well, now, there's a moral to the story here. Mm-hmm. I mean, Port are going to be up and down, but Port recognised.
Port will play finals, I think. And Kelly Underwood said this on Offsiders a couple of weeks ago. I feel, and I agree with her, she feels there will be coaching changes at the end of this year. More than one.
Well, there could be coach swaps too. There could be people going to different clubs.
What, Longmire for Scott?
Well, it's, who knows?
Well, there's some angst there, isn't there? Because you've got, you know, Corey McKernan was tweeting about it angrily about North. Wayne Carey told Talking Footy on Monday night the players are to blame and the club's becoming irrelevant. You know, is there, have we overrated their list because of those inclusions?
There's an interesting narrative here of North supporters get at the media for not going hard enough on North. North people and North supporters, because North don't galvanise the sort of attention that a Richmond or a Collingwood or Essendon would, and they feel that the media, almost like they're wanting a siege of Arden Street.
Well, they were on Broadway on Friday and they badly let their supporters down.
Take a break, just between us.
Just between us.
Well, welcome to another edition of Just Between Us, and Sam McClure's whereabouts are, they remain unknown. So, Anthony Colangelo again off the bench. Anthony, good to have you with us.
Pleasure to be here in Sam's place, Dan.
Anthony, we start this week with Tim Kelly, who has started the season very well again. He was held by Matt DeBoer of the Giants last week, but overall has had a very bright start to the year. Of course, his contract is a big talking point. Out of contract again, out of contract at the end of the year. Tried to move to West Coast at the end of last year. Deal didn't get done. Fremantle at that point, we recall, was sort of on the outer. The Kelly party didn't really want a bar of the Dockers. But just between us, we hear there might have been a bit of a softening there. Perhaps his manager, Anthony van der Wielen, might have toured Fremantle recently.
Really? Mm. He's been welcomed back into Fremantle. Ross has put out the welcome mat.
I don't think it was ever an issue of Fremantle not welcoming him. It was more vice versa. But I think Peter Bell is trying to smooth things over.
He can be very persuasive, Peter Bell. Dan, just between us, it's been a long time since I've given an AFL esports update, but I have one. I know everyone's been waiting for it.
Stop the presses.
The AFL last year held their first esports tournament. It was in the game League of Legends, and it was a State of Origin tournament at Margaret Court Arena. Just between us, it didn't go too well, I don't think, Dan, from a financial perspective.
How not too well are we talking, Anthony?
Talking ticket sales were poor, and we're talking the financial side of things weren't great, and not expecting it to be a bonanza from the start, but things just might be rethought a little bit, and there are also some eyebrows raised in the industry over the fact that you have one of the things about video game teams is that you don't restrict them to certain geographical locations, and that was done with the State of Origin format. But also just between us, Dan, is that if they need to look for help, Adelaide are doing things fantastically. They're 2 years in to their esports investment, and they've just gone cash positive, and understand that similar kind of cash inflow to their women's team is what their esports dealings are bringing in.
We finish up this week with the Collingwood Football Club, who are going okay, not badly at
not
all.
Not bad.
And one of their Irish recruits, Anton Tohill, not a big name by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a category B rookie, international rookie. They were trying to get him down for a very good cause to the Good Friday Appeal.
Great cause.
The Royal Children's Hospital. But they ran into a bit of trouble because, just between us, they struggled to get him a working with children's permit because he's from Ireland and they couldn't get the requisite police checks.
Really?
I think it was all smoothed over in the end, but I know the Pies had to pull a few strings, or sort of, maybe not pull a few strings, but they had to work to make it get done. But it was all good in the end.
Hopefully it all worked out and he got down there to raise some money, Dan.
Very important cause. Just between us.
Just between us.
Can they create a path for him? Lloyd, beautifully done. McCreary off to Hearn. Hearn will cruise into goal, and he should kick it, and he does.
Collingwood by a point. Lockyer brings it in. Ryder sandwiched between two Pies. Back of the pack is Windelick. Quick handball to Hocking. Back to Lovett Murray. He goes short. It's a mark to Zaharakis. Zaharakis has kicked a goal. The Bombers are in front of the G. Scenes here. David Zaharakis puts Essendon back in front.
Welcome back. Anzac Day this year might be the most anticipated clash because of the quality of the teams as opposed to the quantity of supporters, Cara.
Well, it's both, isn't it? It's both. I'm fascinated by this game most years, and I'm particularly fascinated this year. I feel that Collingwood are just looking powerful at the moment. I know they've had a couple of disappointments, but I reckon they'll take on Essendon and beat them.
They look pretty clinical on up in Brisbane.
Yeah, the big thing for them was when you add Beams, you get back Elliott, and then also you add a couple others. It's almost like the basketball term, yeah, who gets the right amount of shots. They've sort of just been trying to work out who gets what amount of minutes forward, what amount of minutes inside the centre bounce, and I think that's going to be a work in progress for them, but they seem to be finding it pretty quickly at the moment.
And Jake, Treloar looked to have that explosiveness. Yeah. Since
the first game since he did the double, that incredible double hamstring injury, which I've never seen in football ever before. First time that he got that explosiveness back, and sometimes his ability to run with the ball, draw a player, and then get the ball back and create an overlap.
Mm.
You know, and they scored quite often off that.
Yeah, because the way side's set up, they try and, you know, your last defender being 60 metres away, Cara, we'll use Alex Rance because he's always very good at it. He's always about 60 metres away because you can keep the whole game in front of you. But if someone blasts away from a contested situation and carries it 15, and then you get really short in your defence, so then you can have, you know, almost like an out number forward of the ball because they've all of a sudden got you caught out of position. You you're too close to where Treloar is eventually going to kick the footy.
And Dane Beams, Carol, I know you've been a critic of his at times, and me too, and but his performance up there facing the Brisbane fans was actually very good.
Yeah, it was good. I didn't think he was all that. I think he's had a couple of down games and he's looked a bit slow at times, and jury's still out for me. I just don't like players who double deal, and I didn't like that last year. And I certainly didn't. When he said, what did he say before the game?
Barrack for Brisbane.
I stood up and said I was staying because I thought the trade couldn't be done, and then it could. Well, I don't actually think that's the way it quite happened. But anyway, got to move on. I feel on Thursday that Jordan De Goey is just going to do something spectacular. I'm really looking forward to see how Danaher shapes up after one game. I mean, I feel it's going to be a big show.
Well, the Bombers and – well, both teams played that fast footy too, which is interesting.
And a number of teams, and Richmond too, playing that sort of shoveling game where they get the ball, just take it forward no matter what. Much better aesthetics.
Yeah, we'll find out, I think, on Thursday whether Essendon's the real change of heart they had a few weeks ago after those ordinary two rounds, whether it's real. And we're thinking that it might be.
They've got the players, haven't they, Jimmy?
Yeah, certainly do. They've been able to take the game forward a lot more instead of sitting back. And that was their problem, the start of last year and the start of this year, is where they just sat back and tried to launch from way back. Now they're actually getting the ball back in the middle of the ground, and then you see the halfbacks joining, Saad, McKenna, these sort of guys. So that's the difference for me, is they're actually starting a lot higher on the ground, which makes them really dangerous.
What's the matchup you're most looking forward to?
Oh, good question. Actually, I wouldn't mind seeing how Heppel and Pendlebury go against each other. With all the speed around them, those two just seem to navigate their way around the field absolutely perfect. They both look like they don't sweat either. It's actually kind of annoying how easy they get through a game, those two. So I wouldn't mind seeing the two skippers, where they sort of position themselves in the game.
Are we all tipping Collingwood?
I think Collingwood at the moment. I think they just have more of those high-end players around the square that they can bring in and mix and match than Essendon.
Well, I tip Collingwood because they're a known. I think Essendon are still an unknown. Now, Essendon could be really good this year. They've got the potential to challenge, but we don't know for sure.
It's interesting too. They've got Hoskin Elliott still out and due to come back, and there's a bit of a squeeze on for positions there. You've had Daniel Wells has played two really good games in the VFL. Now, I don't suspect that he's going to come in for Anzac Day, but he's a class player. You're going to have to find a place for him the mix.
I think Sire hasn't played.
Yep.
Speaking of coming in, and shifting the conversation to Anzac Eve, I'm worried about Jack Riewoldt. I would like him to have another week off. I mean, I know he's had the wrist and he's been banging the door down for one round already, but I think there's also a slight knee issue and they can get problematic. And I think Jack Riewoldt's more important in August, September, and I think Richmond will play finals.
I'm really surprised, Cara. I was really surprised when I heard he was going to come back for this game. This is a game that Richmond, with Tom Lynch, who didn't do that much against the Swans, but is a fantastic recruit, and his game, he was
unbelievable.
Over the line against Port Adelaide.
Yep, against Port.
They don't need to play, and they're playing well enough, Richmond, to comfortably deal with Melbourne in their current state.
All right, now put yourself in Melbourne's match committee. If he comes in, he still has to draw a good defender. Now, we just spoke about Melbourne's defence. Yeah. Now, what are we going to do? So that means McDonald might have to go back. So you're pulling apart their forward line alone just by the presence of having Jack Riewoldt on the field. So, all right, who are we sending? Is Oscar McDonald going to him? Is Frost going to Lynch? Like, the headaches it could cause just by having his name on the team sheet for Melbourne could be worth it.
Well, McDonald's forcing not Melbourne, going any good anyway.
Yeah.
Forcing Melbourne to pull apart their structure might be a good thing for Melbourne.
The way the season's going, it could be another massive upset. But on paper, bit hard to judge Richmond, really. On Saturday night, the Swans, they're no good. They're no good at the moment. So I don't think you're lauding that as a great victory. Certainly
Richmond,
Port Adelaide was a great victory.
I think Port Adelaide was a great win, but I think Richmond's maintained their style and they're playing. Actually, they've played better. That week, I think getting those young players in, Caro, was actually crucial, because last year, if I was critical of them, I think that they had a very static 22 or 23 players.
Yeah. Bolton and Baker almost brought back premiership pressure, Richmond's premiership pressure, that manic pressure on the ball. And you called it shoveling it forward, but surging it forward. I think they've added a fair bit of spark back into that Richmond side.
The thing I'm happiest, I'm most impressed with is Shane Edwards' leadership. I mean, I know everyone gave best on ground. A lot of people did to Dustin Martin. I noticed the Age gave it to Edwards. I don't know who covered the game.
I thought Edwards was best on the ground.
I thought he was magnificent. And I'm so impressed with, you lose all your entire leadership group and someone steps up. And he is a veteran now, I guess, but I think he's been fantastic.
Yeah. I know Eddie Betts probably goes down as goal of the round or possibly goal of the year to date for that phenomenal goal. And Gary's was brilliant. But when Dusty hit that pack front and square, that was as good a goal as has been kicked this year.
You try them 1,000 times at footy training, you just go for the big glory shot going across right across the front.
It just fell.
And then you get one and then you go, oh, geez, it's lucky it's a training. But he just absolutely nailed that perfectly coming across the front.
Yeah. We'll take a break. Quick questions coming up.
If you like what you're hearing, let us know about it. Head to iTunes, rate, review and subscribe.
Space, allowed those to run onto it. Through, got it from Boat. Card Stevens got it. Gacy's whole team bends it around to perfection.
Jimmy, if anyone understands leadership, it's you. 100% strike rate as captain of the Cats.
One for one, I retired as a captain on top. It doesn't get any better than this. Over in the West, getting against the Eagles. But,
So you're well qualified to answer the quick question. Is Travis Boak playing better as without the captaincy?
I think he's playing a different role. Look, he's certainly playing great footy at the moment. I think he's playing a bit more inside again. You know, his role that we came accustomed to for most of his career. I think in recent times, they've tried to put him out on the half-forward flank while they got, you know, more games into Ollie Wines and a few other young players like Power Pepper. But I think they've understood having him around on the ball with those two guys who are real physical, contested style players, but they're handball first players. Whereas Boak's, I think, a better kick than both of those, a better field kick. So he becomes a good running mate for those two. So if you have your on-ball division of Wines, Power Pepper, who bash and crash, Boak's such a smart player to get himself in a position to receive the footy. So I think it's working really well. Look, there's always a bit of freedom with no captaincy, but you know, you're not going to just give up and be quiet and silent anyway. He'll be still steering the team around the field.
Quick question. Long answer.
Quick question. Hey, it's like just the election campaign.
Look, I've learnt perfectly off these two in Niall and Wilson. So,
all right. Well, Caro, a Dorothy Dixer for you, really, because you've already touched on it. But should North be given the Good Friday slot next year if they don't improve throughout the rest of the season?
Yes, with a few provisos. There shouldn't be Good Friday football in the first place. It adds nothing to the calendar and it's greedy and I don't like it. Takes away
despite
a great
tradition.
Despite
the thousands that turn up to watch it.
But look, if you build it, they'll always turn up to the footy. Anyway, North Melbourne deserve it because this is an equalisation thing as much as anything else. They should never have taken it away from the Bulldogs and they should have built a big theme around North Melbourne and the Bulldogs. And I hope the Bulldogs get it back again next year.
For all of you, a listener question from Charlie who wants to know, if you want more attractive football, you need to incentivise the coaches to play a more attractive game. Could this be done by rewarding bonus premiership points if a team hits certain scoring hurdles, Jake?
No, not a good idea. Don't like that at all. But I would countenance this. Get rid of percentage and have points for, no points against counting. So you get separated by points for. Maybe that's worth considering. It's not as radical.
Oh, how many things are we going to change, Jake? Charlie, no offence. We love suggestions, but there's always going to be mitigating circumstances with scoring. No, you shouldn't get extra points. It's like when you tip 9 winners, you get a bonus point. I mean, no.
No, I'm not for bonus points. I'm saying no. You just don't have percentage.
I think you've got to take into account defence as well as attack. So, no, I wouldn't change the percentage system and I wouldn't give bonus points. Jimmy?
No, thank you, Charlie. Thanks for the question, though. But I think footy's in a pretty good spot. I'm a defender of the game. We've got every side's had a win and we don't have one undefeated side. I think it's in a pretty good position at the moment.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I don't like your idea, Jake, because you've got to take into account wet weather footy too. You have games in wet where you don't score as highly.
Oh, the Cairns swimming pool. Like
exactly.
Poor from you, Jake. Yeah, unlike you.
Come on, Jake. I was just saying just consider it. That's all. Discuss it.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, we'll discuss this. Birds of Tokyo caused a controversy with the AFL's interesting decision to appoint to announce them for the Anzac Day. Should there be pre-game entertainment of a musical variety like this, Jake?
No, I want Anzac Day to be a solid. It's a solid.
The army band. You're happy with the army band?
Very happy with the normal military sort of cavalcade, and the moment silence when the pin drops. It's a solemn day. I don't generally like being bombarded with things outside of the game is the entertainment.
What about like Shane Howe, a bit of, you know, red gum and only 19?
I don't mind, you know, Kate Sobrano singing the national anthem or if, you know,
the national anthem, yes. I mean, that's part of it.
Something happens at the AFL HQ. I mean, on every level you can justify it. It's happened before. You know, it's been a long time since World War II. There's a thousand reasons why. But there's one reason you just wouldn't do it, and it's the gut feeling you get when you hear that Birds of Tokyo were playing on Anzac Day. And somebody at that joint should have gone, nup.
It just felt like whoever made the decision has never been to Anzac Day.
I felt like if you're going to have it at halftime, because I feel like the morning leading up to the game is,
or after the game.
Yeah, it's a time for reflection leading up to the game, and the game almost signifies a celebration of Anzac Day. I feel like once the first ball is bounced, all right, we celebrate the day. Leading up to it is reflection. And then having entertainment, I think, before the game. I know it sounds a little bit weird and a little bit out of sync, but...
Why do we have to be entertained all the time?
No, but I'm saying if you're going to go down that path, you've got the entertainment once the ball's being bounced. Leading up to the ball being bounced is reflection. Now we're entertaining. You can have the entertainment at halftime.
That's right. It's up until that minute silence.
Yeah, exactly
it breaks
right.
After the minute silence and then the entertainment kicks
in. Spot on.
Well, we'll go out on me. That wraps up this episode of the podcast. Thanks to our panel for this week. Caro, thanks for joining us. Jimmy, and of course, Jake. Keep your feedback coming via email to realfootypod@theage.com.au. That is The Age now, not Fairfax Media. So realfootypod@theage.com.au. And if you have a spare minute, help us out by leaving us a review on iTunes. Thank you to Fox Footy and Channel 7 for the audio we've used this week. We'll be back next Monday. Catch you then.